Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Sarah Dykstra. On this edition of the podcast, we'll hear from Senator Joe Donnelly about the latest from East Chicago and a potential visit from Dr. Ben Carson, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, along with Stephen Lattimore's report on more than 40,000 bottles of water being donated to the lead-contaminated stricken city. Purdue Northwest will expand, as will Purdue University of West Lafayette. Sharon Jackson and Chris Morisi-Visa from WBAA will have full reports on new buildings and new ownerships. Plus, we will hear about a controversial bill that Governor Eric Holcomb signed into law this week, changing his stance on a legalized form of cannabis. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The I-65 Northwest Indiana Expansion Project is now officially underway. Sharon Jackson has more.
It's part of the Major Moves 2020 expansion project. Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb, State Representative Ed Soliday, and Indiana Department of Transportation Commissioner Joe McGinnis were all in attendance at a groundbreaking Friday at the I-65 southbound way station at mile marker 241. At the event, Holcomb said the I-65 expansion is important for the entire state.
I hope it's obvious when you're driving on it in the future. It's all about addressing congestion and increasing safety. And so it's always good to be up in the region, but when we have a bill that was signed into law yesterday, ushered through the General Assembly, historic proportion and or historic ramifications in a positive way, it's good to be up here to kick it all off.
The $62 million project is expected to improve traffic flow and add capacity on I-65 from State Road 2 to U.S. 30 in Newton and Lake counties. Soliday says the I-65 expansion is a necessity for the state.
We need six lanes border to border. This was part of the original Ileana project, and the past governor and this governor said, let's go ahead with it. We have the money set aside. Let's go ahead and get this done. If you drive this road during the rush hours, it is very, very busy on this road, so the additional lanes are very important.
Construction is scheduled to start around June 1st. McGinnis says the project will improve safety and ease congestion on one of Indiana's busiest interstate segments and represents a significant investment in the region's transportation network. During the project, a new shoulder will be constructed and the existing lanes restriped to accommodate three lanes in each direction on I-65 from U.S. 231 to just south of U.S. 30. The project is being constructed on an accelerated timeline, and work is expected to be completed in the fall of 2018. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sharon Jackson.
Help for East Chicago is pouring into the area by the truckload. The Rotarians have just delivered the largest bottled water donation to date with over 40,000 bottles of water. Lakeshore Public Radio's Stephen Lattimore has the story.
That's the sound of help from Strachan Van Til grocery stores, the Rotarians, and the Community Strategic Group of East Chicago. They're delivering a semi-truck full of 20 pallets of over 40,000 bottles of water to be given to residents of East Chicago who are suffering through the lead crisis. Mary Kaska is a Hammond Rotarian.
Well, Rotary, I'm a Rotarian, and Rotary is, our motto is service above self. So Rotary clubs all over the world, even here in our own region, Hammond, Munster, Highland, Griffith, Rotarians do a lot of service work. And that's just who we are. We contribute back to the community we live in. We do international projects. And water is a Rotary mission.
Why?
Because we take for granted that water is, that we have water. We go to our tap and turn the faucet on and water comes out, and we trust that it's safe. But we know all over the world that's not true. There are many places all over the world that don't have a source of water. So Rotary does wells and reservoirs and piping. And when I became aware of the problem here in our own community, that people were impacted by this terrible problem of lead in their water, I said, well, we're Rotarians. This is what we should do, is come together and try to do something to be involved here to help these people, because that's just what we do. Gary Rotary Club actually did a water drive at the 18th Street Brewery. They said, bring a case of water and you'll get a free beer. and they generated 150 cases of water just in one night.
Natalia Polizos of Northwest Metals is helping to store the water until it could be delivered.
What moved you to do this?
The will of God. The will of God. He's always there. He's been there for us, you know, through thick and thin, and he's still here with us, and I like to help the community out.
Wanda Guardelis of the Community Strategic Group is coordinating deliveries with local churches.
This is water to be distributed out into the Superfund sites, which is zones 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Even the forklift driver donated his time to help. Adam Pimentel is born and raised in East Chicago.
Take care of everybody who's been here and who needs the help. All the East Chicagoans need to unite, right?
Tom Sapansky is an East Chicago resident who, along with his family from Valparaiso, is helping to coordinate even more bottled water deliveries.
Well, I think the word's getting around finally. It started out with small groups, a group out of Valpo, Valpo Blue, which was my brother and sister-in-law. They gave the biggest donations initially to get it rolling. And then I've actually did a couple myself. Purdue Northwest is helping out. Bishop Noe here locally is helping out. Key people are going out and asking. And then Mary, who you spoke to a little bit earlier, I received the biggest donation, as you see right here, 20 pallets, over 40,000 bottles of water.
In East Chicago, Stephen Lattimore.
Lead paint was discovered outside emergency housing units in East Chicago. The units are being held for residents of the lead-contaminated West Calumet housing complex. Through a public records request, the Times of Northwest Indiana found evidence of lead paint on the exterior of nearly half of the 27 units. The East Chicago Housing Authority says the paint hazards have been cleaned up and that the units are in compliance with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development standards. But the Sergeant Shriver Center on Poverty Law, which represents some West Calumet residents, says the documents show widespread noncompliance with HUD regulations. According to the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority, 17 West Calumet families have moved into emergency transfer units. You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Now that the Kankakee River is a designated water trail, the Northwest Indiana Paddling Association will continue to offer educational opportunities as well as to further the brand of the Kankakee River as a national water trail. Sharon Jackson has the story.
Dan Plath is the chief of resource management for the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore and the former president of the Northwest Indiana Paddling Association. He says the national water trail designation could offer great benefits to the region.
Using basically that designation as a marketing tool for locals basically to recognize and actually maybe capture some of the economic benefits as well as environmental stewardship benefits of being a national water trail.
Plath says it has taken about 8 years to get the Kankakee River National Water Trail where it is today. Through the Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Committee, the Northwest Indiana Greenways and Blueways Plan was created.
About 2007, 2008, that plan was coming about. And basically the idea is developing water trails on Northwest Indiana rivers and streams and lakes. And in 2009, the Northwest Indiana Paddling Association started formally as a organization. It was organized basically to help implement this plan.
The Kankakee River Basin Commission then teamed up with local landowners along the river on the Indiana side to clear log jams on the river and develop public access and signage. The NWIPA developed an overnight camping spot, marketed the river, and offered educational programs, all things that led up to the river's water trail designation through the National Park Service. NWIPA hosts a couple of big events every year, the Kankakee River Sandhill Crane Paddle on October 15th and the Everglades of the North Paddle, which is being held in August. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sharon Jackson.
Representative Pete Visklosky, Hobart Mayor Brian Snedecor, and other officials were on hand in Hobart Monday to usher in the beginning of the Hobart Marsh Mitigation Project. Lakeshore Public Radio's Dan Clark reports.
Shovels pierce the dirt to commemorate the start of a mitigation project that has been years in the making in Hobart, with a goal of ultimately restoring nearly 350 acres of various native wooded and wetland habitat types. State Representative Pete Visglosky says the project will improve the environment and the overall economy of the area.
Too often we look at places such as this as a dump site in Northwest Indiana. I'm convinced that what you have done here today is changing that. That you'll see an area-wide marsh preserve.
Hobart Mayor Brian Snedecor says it took a while to put the pieces together, but with the work of local, state, and federal officials, along with the community, the final result will benefit all.
And this is really a kind of a textbook project that other communities should maybe look at, because when you get that kind of input, yes, sometimes it may take longer to get it done, but when it does get to the finish line, it's a product that everybody can say, hey, this is going to be a good project.
Along with enhancing, restoring, and preserving the Hobart Marsh, the project will improve structural components with new signs, fences, off-road vehicle barriers, and three new visitor parking lots. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dan Clark.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. A federal agency has awarded Indiana nearly $11 million to fight the state's opioid abuse crisis. All 50 states and some U.S. territories were awarded funding from grants from Health and Human Services, also known as the Health Department, for a total of $485 million to assist the war on drug abuse. This issue has become a public health epidemic with devastating consequences, including not just increases in opioid abuse and related fatalities from overdoses, but has also led to the rise of neonatal abstinence syndrome due to opioid use during pregnancy, and the increased spread of infectious diseases, including HIV and hepatitis C. The Indianapolis Star reports that Scott County, Indiana, saw 190 HIV cases in 2015. Grants from the Health Department were awarded based in part on overdose death rates. According to Indiana.gov, Indiana had 2,039 fatal overdoses and over 11,000 recorded overdoses from 2011 to 2015. It's the death toll and skyrocketing costs associated with it that have led Congress to make changes. The funding will support a wide variety of prevention as well as treatment and recovery services for people addicted to opioids. U.S. taxpayers are already paying billions of dollars every year because of the nationwide opioid epidemic. According to the Associated Press, the total economic burden of prescription opioid misuse in the U.S. is $78.5 billion a year. This includes the cost of health care, lost productivity, addiction treatment, and criminal justice involvement. The economic impact in the Hoosier State is high. Indiana.gov reports that in 2014, the overdose death rate cost the state more than $1.4 billion. Indiana Congresswoman Susan Brooks, chairwoman of the House Ethics Committee, says Indiana has been hard hit by heroin and prescription opioid abuse. Brooks says the $10.9 million in funding will help Indiana get the resources it desperately needs to reduce overdose deaths and boost substance abuse treatment and recovery. Not all overdoses result in death. The term drug overdose describes the ingestion or application of a drug or other substance in quantities greater than the recommended or generally practiced amount. An overdose may result in a toxic state or death. Most people associate overdoses directly with death, but this is not the case. Symptoms of an overdose can include nausea, vomiting, breathing difficulties or not breathing, internal bleeding, and may result in coma or death. Governor Eric Holcomb signed a bill yesterday that is Indiana's first medical cannabis law. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports it legalizes a form of cannabis, cannabidiol, or CBD, for the treatment of epilepsy.
At the beginning of the session, Governor Eric Holcomb indicated that he did not support any proposals that allowed the use of cannabis. But this week, his tune changed.
This does not put us on a slippery slope to legalizing marijuana. Quite the contrary.
Holcomb says the testimony from Hoosiers in favor of CBD, a non-psychoactive form of cannabis, was powerful. Betty Jo Boucher applauds the new law. Her son was diagnosed with primary generalized epilepsy 2 years ago.
This is an option that we did not have before this bill would be signed. And I think that's all we ever want is options, to keep our kids healthy and safe.
Indiana legislators have considered CBD for epilepsy bills for the past 7 years. The new law creates a registry and allows anyone diagnosed with uncontrollable seizures to try CBD. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
Purdue University Northwest officials say it took nearly 15 years of planning, persistence, and efforts to get some vital legislative support. But lawmakers finally approved construction of a new instructional facility at Purdue University Northwest Hammond campus. Sharon Jackson has more.
The General Assembly early Saturday morning allocated $35.1 million for construction of the Bioscience Innovation Building on the Hammond campus. It will house state-of-the-art instructional and research facilities for nursing, biological sciences, and STEM education. The antiquated GITE Annex will be torn down to make way for the new Bioscience Innovation Building. GITE was the longtime home to the College of Nursing. It was built on campus for Inland Steel to use as a research facility in the 1950s. Purdue University Northwest Chancellor Thomas Keehan thanked those who supported the project and moved it along toward realization. The new building will house collaborative learning environments, including cutting-edge instructional labs. It will also provide advanced STEM educational opportunities through a broad range of concentrations in biotechnology, cell physiology, ecology, microbiology, and pre-professional studies. Additionally, it will advance clinical simulation and lab space for PNW's College of Nursing, recognized as a center of excellence by the National League of Nursing. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sharon Jackson.
Purdue University trustees have voted to acquire the academic operations of online educator and testing company Kaplan. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Chris Maurice Vitsa reports it happened at a special meeting of the trustees Thursday morning.
President Mitch Daniels says the acquisition allows Purdue to reach people around the world, including the one-third of Hoosiers who are working but have no education beyond high school. He says it's a problem that's perplexed state government and education leaders for a long time.
What are we going to do about those who missed their opportunity the first time around and will not have a fully productive and successful life unless somehow they add skills and credentials?
Daniel says the deal came together in a little more than 5 months after Purdue leaders realized that starting an online education program from scratch would be expensive and less efficient than acquiring the resources of an established firm. Purdue will pay $1 for Kaplan's academic assets and will keep the first $10 million of profit for each of the first 5 years, according to documents filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission. In return, Purdue has signed a long-term service agreement for Kaplan to provide certain services. Kaplan, which has been owned by the Washington Post Company for more than 30 years, will transition its for-profit model to that of a public university. Kaplan Chairman and CEO Andy Rosen says his company and Purdue share the same mission, that of educating people who typically don't have access to higher education.
You know, we've built this institution over a long period of time. We are turning it over to someone. You want to make sure that the party you're turning it over to is someone you feel absolutely confident in, and that was easy here.
Pending approval from federal, state, and university accreditation agencies, Kaplan's 32,000 students, 3,000 faculty and staff, and 15 campuses will shift to the Purdue brand and be operated by a separate board established by Purdue. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Morisi-Vitsa in West Lafayette.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly gave Lakeshore Public Radio an update on several big issues here in Northwest Indiana and on Capitol Hill in a Wednesday morning conversation this week. Donnelly began his comments with his latest efforts to get the head of the Department of Housing and Urban Development to tour East Chicago's lead-contaminated neighborhoods.
Well, we're working to have Secretary Carson set up the date for him to come, Ben Carson, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. When he was up for nomination, I met with him and said, you know, I can't vote for you unless you're willing to come to East Chicago with me. And so he readily agreed, said he wanted to be here in East Chicago to see the situation on the ground, to talk to the residents, and so we expect his arrival. We are going to continue to find homes for everyone in Zone 1. That's the zone that was directly above the lead smelter, And in zones 2 and 3, we're going to work to make sure that all of the contaminated soil is removed, that it's replaced, that everything is back to an appropriate fashion in that way, and to make sure that our residents have the quality of life they expected, where their kids can play in their yards, where they can drink water from their taps, and have the life that they thought when they bought their houses.
I know that some of the concerns that I know the residents had here, and that's why I'm glad that Secretary Carson is going to come to find out and talk more from the HUD agency standpoint, is about finding proper housing. Some residents had concerns, even though they've been getting assistance from the Cook County Housing Authority over in Illinois to find places over there. They still aren't sure that they've got the right homes that they'll feel comfortable and safe in. So I'm sure they're probably looking forward to hearing something more official from the boss at HUD.
Well, we'd rather have them home in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And home in a place that they're comfortable in, that they like, that they feel safe in. And so that's the goal, is to make sure everybody has their housing situation squared away in a way that that they like.
I understand that you're very pleased with what President Trump issued for an executive order looking into some of the issues that still exist around steel imports. Tell us about that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're a big steel manufacturer in Northwest Indiana, probably the largest in the United States. And my job is to fight for our people and our country. And China and India and other countries have been dumping steel in our nation, have been sending steel in at a lower price. And we want to fight back and make sure that that our steelmakers are on an even playing field. President Trump, with his executive order, is looking into all of this, and I support that. Look, you know, when the president does something that makes sense, count me in every single time. When it doesn't make sense, I'll pass. But when it does, I'm right there with them.
I also, too, know lately that you mentioned that about $11 million is coming back to Indiana from Washington to help address our very serious opioid crisis. Tell us a little bit about that, where the funds are coming from.
The funds are coming from the 21st Century Cures Act, which I helped sponsor and pass. And the funds are designed to help local law enforcement, help EMS, help communities throughout our state dealing with the heroin and opioid crisis, to help with treatment, to help with purchase of anti-overdose drugs, to make sure that our young people can survive this scourge. That's the whole idea.
Okay. We've always known that you have kept your eye on veterans to make sure that they are well cared for, and I understand lately there have been some efforts that you've been working on, in particular helping Gulf War veterans. Tell us about that, please.
Well, we've been able to get a Gulf War memorial site on the National Mall. We don't have the exact location, mm-hmm. but it's now been approved by the Senate and the House that there will be a memorial on the Mall. And my partner, John Bozeman, Republican from Arkansas, and I worked together on this, and we were able to get this passed through the Senate and through the House. This is going to honor all of those who fought in the Gulf Wars, all of those who lost their lives, protecting and defending our country and our friends and our allies. And it's appropriate and the right thing to do.
Well, finally, Senator Donnelly, as we speak here on Wednesday morning, we know that Congress is still working hard to come up with the extension of funding to keep the federal government going here after the deadline coming up this weekend here. And I understand that one new development, which I think has helped out, I'm sure, in probably moving the efforts along, is, some assurance from the White House that the border wall is not going to be tacked on to that particular funding. It's going to be probably brought up, what, probably 2018?
Well, we don't know, but it looks optimistic and positive for everything to get resolved this weekend, for the government to continue to be funded. And I'm a very strong supporter of making sure we have a strong border that works, that protects our nation. But, you know, in putting this wall into the middle of this discussion did not lend toward a good conclusion.
Let me ask about the budget that has already been just proposed, of course, that the Trump administration had put forth to the media and to the public here earlier in his administration. He had talked about making some big changes. What is the status, as far as you know, that you're likely on Capitol Hill to hear more about this budget proposal? Has been any more discussion or any more clues from the White House when that's going to be put out?
Well, I think that this budget is a non-starter for the following reasons. Mm-hmm. It strips out funding for the National Institute for Health, which is working to find a cure for cancer and diabetes and heart disease and multiple sclerosis, one of the most important things we can do. And so I didn't come to Washington to take away the money that would be used to try to find the cure for cancer. It strips money out from the Coast Guard, who is on patrol out in Florida right as we speak, right on the Gulf and through those areas, trying to get drug runners, who is on patrol in the Great Lakes to keep all of us safe as well. And so when we do common sense things in the budget, I'll support it. But when things look completely wrong and completely wrongheaded, I'll pass on those.
Chris Nolte will talk with State Senator Eddie Melton on Monday on Regionally Speaking about his first General Assembly session after being elected this past November. Melton will discuss Senate Bill 567, which he sponsored, that puts a state-appointed emergency manager in charge of the Gary School Corporation, taking over for the elected school board and administration. Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program's link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Sharon Jackson. Also, make sure to stay tuned all day Monday as we'll have recaps from Washington, D.C., from Stephen Lattimore, and from Chris Nolte in Highland on the weekend's climate change rallies on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure to search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sarah Dykstra.